Hello and good morning to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach and we are going to be continuing our study in the book of Genesis today. For all of our listeners, I apologize that we didn't go out last Friday morning. We had a church member pass away, funeral and everything was that day. So we're trying to get caught up today. We will, of course, start it this Friday at 10 a.m. like normal again, though, with our podcast. And so to kind of give you a refresher, because today we are getting in a chapter in the book of Genesis that I sadly have to say is probably one of the more controversial chapters. And when I say controversial, I mean not that there's, a debate doctrinally or if we think there's something here that's allowed to happen, supposed to happen, but more about where pastors have put the focus of what happens in Genesis chapter 16. And of course, if you've been in church a little bit or you've sat under a pastor for a little bit, many of you probably know that Genesis chapter 16 is, of course, the, I would call it a straight up an affair, but not only that, but maybe even a sanctioned or statutory rape type situation of Hagar with Abram and Sarai. The story of Sarai giving her handmaiden to Abram to produce her an heir. And there's a couple of things with this chapter that we need to take into consideration when looking at it. Many times many even commentators that I have seen excuse me, when studying the book of Genesis, all really pin this whole story on Hagar and Hagar being the problem. And I think that's completely unjustified. I think that's an attempt to try to keep Abram as this man of faith. You know, even when we were children, that's how Abraham was presented as this great man of faith. And yes, he is mentioned for that many, many times in the Bible. But just because you're a great man of faith does not mean that you don't have times in your life where you have no faith or you take great falls. And so I think in an effort to kind of clean up the image of Abram, we try to paint the blame of everything that happens here on Hagar. But we need to take into consideration a few things. First of all, Abram was told to go to a land that God would show him, right? And he ended up in Egypt. Hagar is an Egyptian woman. She is, I don't have a shadow of a doubt, 99.9% certain, that Hagar was part of what Abram and Sarai received in the sense of wealth as they left Egypt, okay? But before we start blaming Hagar for that, who went to Egypt when they were not supposed to go to Egypt? Who lacked the faith to do what they were supposed to do in light of a drought? Abram did. In fact, Abram had so little faith that he even was going to sell off his wife to Pharaoh to try and preserve his own life. So what's going to happen here in chapter 16 is not just a, be sure your sins will find you out type situation. But you have to remember that this young woman, I had more than beyond certain, had no desire to be with these two individuals at all. In fact, if she was there for what happened in Egypt, her opinion of Sarai and Abram, I am sure, is very little, if anything at all. Even a pagan king rebuked Abram for what he did. And I'm sure Hagar is aware of that. So right off the bat, many people go into this and go, well, Hagar was a willing participant because he was a wealthy man, and that would have given her some status. That's not true. A woman's desire, yes, was to bear children and to marry a wealthy man. She's not marrying Abram here. She is essentially being used as a tool by Abram and his wife. So not only would I say that Hagar not only had a poor opinion of Abram and Sarai, but she's also being used here. She's not going to gain any status by this. She does not become a wife. She is merely used for her anatomical abilities. And so I to say Hagar brought this on herself, or Hagar was a willing participant, is absolutely foolish. She's a servant in the house of two people who she's already seen lie to get what they want. And again, she is a servant, a slave to Abram and Sarai. She doesn't really have an option, okay? Unless she wants to do what she's going to do later in the chapter, which is to run out into the wilderness where she almost dies. So to go into this story, blaming Hagar would be absolutely foolish, and there's a final reason for why that would be. Just in chapter 15, what happened? God came to Abram and said, "Fear not, I will be your shield, your protector, and I will be your exceeding great reward." And even then, Abram asked him, is he going to be a blood heir? God said, yes, he's going to be a blood heir. Step outside. God did everything in the world to prove to Abram that his promise that he would have descendants with his wife Sarai was 110% true. And so when this situation comes up, literally right after this conversation, now I know there's probably an undisclosed amount of time that takes place here, but for lack of a better way of putting it, literally this event comes after God has signed a covenant contract with Abram, proving not just spiritually over and over and over again, but also physically, even in the ways of Abram's culture, that God was going to fulfill his wish. And so what happens here, his desire, I mean, what happens here is that Sarai's faith is completely plummeted. Abram, as her spouse, as the leader of her home, should be stepping in and doing his job. But instead, Hagar's a young, pretty lady, and your wife's telling you to go ahead. There's a lot that becomes obvious of the fact that Sarai and Abram not only have a very, very long way to go, but that Abram follows in the paths of similar sins that we see in his descendants. So let's get into chapter 16 here. Let's look at what is, in my opinion, a huge tragedy for the book of Genesis. It says, "Now Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children, and she had a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar." So we've already talked about the fact that obviously Hagar would have come out of their small trip to Egypt, okay? And Moses, as he's writing all of this down for us, starts off chapter 16 showing you the problem, okay? Sarai has still not had any children, but she has this young maiden from Egypt whose name is Hagar. It says, "And Sarai said unto Abram, Behold now, the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her." So the situation is this. Sarai is unable to bear children. This all is 10 years after God has made the promise, okay, that they're going to have children. And Sarai comes to Abram and says, "Look, God's not letting me have children." Now, this is what's very interesting. Sarai understands that God is in control of whether or not she can have a child, right? She goes to Abram and she starts out saying, "The Lord has restrained me from bearing," meaning she knows that God is in full control of when she's going to have a child or if she will have a child. Now there's a huge, huge problem already with this statement. God has said, "You, Abram, will have physical descendants." And many people go, "Well, maybe Sarai thought that that meant by somebody else, that it wasn't going to be through her." Guys, your Bible only allows for one husband and one wife. there's no stipulation where of me and my wife had not been able to have children that I could have said, okay, well, honey, I'm going to go down to the church and we're going to find the lucky lady who's going to carry our kid for us and I'm going to go into her and we're going to have a child. No, there's nowhere that God allows for that. That's adultery. No matter what your motivation is, no matter what argument you want to make, no matter whether you want to look at this and say, well, I mean, Brother Zach, it was very typical of the time and the culture. Friends, adultery is adultery is adultery. To lie with another woman who is not your wife is adultery. And look at what she's doing. She's coming and saying, I recognize that God is in control of this and God's not allowing it to happen. She's not just got a faith problem here, guys. And many people argue and say, oh, this is sad words. I don't see that here. This isn't just she has a faith problem. This is a she's impatient with God problem. She's got an issue with God problem. They are known for laughing at many of the promises that God is going to make. Okay? There's many times in the Bible where God has made promises to his people that because of their own unbelief and their own impatience, they have gone forward doing what they want to do. She has enough faith in God to know that he's in control, but not enough faith in God that he will keep his promise. And to circumvent God in her way, doing what she thinks is going to be best to fulfill this issue, is, I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. Now, there are some very strange things that go into this practice. Essentially, what Sarai is proposing is a surrogate mother situation. And if you recall correctly, this happened with Isaac and, Jacob and Rachel. Trying to get my patriarch straightened out. This happened with Jacob and Rachel, where Rachel was unable to conceive, and she gave Bilhah to Jacob. And what she says there is that she would have a child on her knees, okay? And so what would happen in a situation like this, now I'm not going to be able to prove it to you. There's some that argue here, argue there. But with a surrogate mother situation like this, just to add to the factor of how outlandishly horrible this request was, not just that it was telling her husband to commit adultery, but also typically in a surrogate situation like this, and many of those times, ancient practices, the husband would actually go about doing the deed with the woman in the lap of the wife or the mother to be, the adoptive mother. And then later, at time of birth, would also have the child in the lap of the adoptive mother. So not only do we have, if this is the case and this sticks with tradition, it may not be the case. It may have been that Abram did all this solo. Either way, we have a situation not only of adultery, but then we also have a very, very, in my opinion, immoral, horrible sexual little feat that takes place here to achieve what she's wanting. She is so adamant to get what she wants that she's even willing to go and watch the act take place if it means trying to circumvent what God wants. Now, I understand with Sarai where a lot of this pain would come from, okay? A lot of this doubt. For one, she's a very old woman. Right? For two, she is more than likely looked down upon by many other people and that are in the camp, because the only job that a woman had in this day and time that mattered in this day and time was the act of bearing a child. And many people blame that on God. That has nothing to do with God, okay? That this is all a cultural thing. That back in the day, that was the expectations, okay? So I understand where she would be coming from. Yes, it's horrible she would even ask this of her husband. It's horrible that she'd even consider it. it's horrible that she would doubt God and to the point that she didn't believe he'd keep his promise, but recognized that he was the one stopping her from having children to begin with. But at a time like this is when a husband is supposed to stand up for what is right. See, men don't understand that God gives us wives to help level us out. Okay, my wife is stronger in areas that I'm not. She's more patient than I am. Many times she can be more loving than I am. Now, if you come after me, that's a different discussion. She's a wildcat, and I'm more likely to give you a free pass. Okay, but here, Abram should have taken Sarah to him and said, look, God's already signed an agreement with me. God's made a pledge before me. God has shown me, I believe that God's going to do what God's going to do. We just need to wait on him. Don't worry about it. Abram could have done, you know, something that many husbands ought to do, which is to diminish what seems like a big problem. There's been plenty of times that my wife has come to me and said, I can't meet this expectation of yours. And been upset or had this problem, that you diminish that. As a husband, you say, that doesn't matter. It's not a big deal. It's no big thing. I'll take care of it. I'll deal with it. That's the job as the leader of the home. And not just the leader, but the spiritual leader. Abram should have said, woman, you lost your ever-loving mind. We will have a child when we have a child. But Abram did a very, very dumb thing. And many people would probably argue with me about his motivation. But I would say that Abram had become impatient with the idea. And then to tack on the fact that he's 86 and Hagar's a very, very young woman. Some say as early as teens. Some say as early 30s. Doesn't matter. Extraordinarily younger than he is. Okay? I think the temptation was more than he was willing to part with. It was essentially his wife saying, you can go and have a good time with a younger woman. And Abram was more than willing to take that up. It says, and Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai, which means he went about it immediately. It wasn't that he heard what she said and went, well, I mean, you know, honey, have you thought about the fact that in the long run, this may cause problems between you and her. This may cause problems between you and me. Not to mention that this is a sin against God even to be considering such an idea. He immediately hears Sarai's demand and he gets to work. There's no hesitation on his part whatsoever. And Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife. Now, many, many people read this, and they're like, oh, well, there you go. See, so he's going to take her and marry her. The idea of to be his wife essentially means that he's going to sleep with her. The Bible says many, many times that there are these relationships that are there. But if you look at the biblical principles, Abram's got but one wife, and that is Sarai. He can do whatever he wants to with Hagar, but that's not going to change the relationship in the eyes of God. It says, and he went in unto Hagar, and she conceived. All right. So, when you're reading this, you go, why in the world would God let this happen? Why in the world would it be that here we are, Abram takes Hagar, goes to do this act, whether it was with Sarai present or not, doesn't matter. And then God would allow her to become pregnant. Why is it that God would allow something like this to happen? Because we know who this child's going to be and what people are going to come out of it and this type of situation, okay? Why would God allow this to happen? Guys, there are many times that you and I decide we're going to do something because we think we know better than God. We think we've got it figured out. And God allows it to happen to teach us a lesson about just because something happens doesn't mean God approves of it. Their sin, their downfall, the misery that's going to come into their relationship is not going to be because they did it and failed, but because they did it and God allowed them to succeed. And that's where the lesson's going to come from for all of them. Here, Abram goes in, and God allows her to immediately conceive, which would be a slap in the face for Sarai, and will be a huge, huge problem in the relationship between all three of these people. It says, so she conceived, and then look at what happened. It says, and when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. Now, there is a huge argument over exactly what's going on here. Some say that Hagar got a haughty attitude, and then she looked down on Sarai because she did something Sarai couldn't do. I highly disagree with that. And the reason that I highly disagree with that is because this is a young woman who has just been forced into a sexual relationship with an 86-year-old man. And now she's having to bear his child as well, knowing that this child is not going to have the inheritance that the promised child's going to have. So here now, she's been pulled in, she sees that she has a child, and she knows that the child is either going to go to Sarai, if we follow through with this, or is going to be cast out of the camp. There was no other choice here. She was either going to not get to raise her kid or get to raise her kid by herself, which was just as dangerous of a situation for a woman in this time. Many people go, oh, she had a haughty attitude. Hagar was all the problem here. Hagar conceived and she turned and went, aha, Sarai, I did something you couldn't do. I don't believe that that was all the case here. I think Hagar knew the kind of people that Abram and Sarai were from her experience in Egypt. And I think that Hagar knew that now she had a child she wasn't even going to get to raise because it was going to go to her mistress. Hagar is in every form and fashion of this chapter a victim of an atrocity committed by God's people. She finally realizes what's going on, and she hates Sarai for it. That idea of her mistress was despised in her eyes is not that she looked down on her, but that it was sharp. It was hating. She belittled. She did not like Sarai in any way, shape, or form. And Sarai said unto Abram, my wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom. And when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. So now we have a situation where these two women absolutely hate each other. One of them, obviously hate's never permissible, but justifiable in some situations here. And in the sense that I understand why Hagar hates this woman. She has just thrown her in her husband's bed. She's going to take her child. There's a lot of things going on here. There's a lot of moving parts. And Hagar had absolutely no say in the matter. And Sarai comes into Abram and says, my wrong be upon thee. She comes and says, this horrible idea that I had, this is your fault. And she's not wrong. They both equally share fault here. But she comes in and she's mad at Abram for what she asked him to do. Guys, reality of the situation is when you and I are impatient, we don't want to wait on God. We think we want to do things our way. And God lets us be successful. I'm here to tell you there's going to be a consequence. There is a payment that is due when trying to circumvent God. She comes in and she immediately blames Abram for what she has done, asked him to do. And she says, I gave her to you and she conceived and now I am despised in her eyes. Whether she's looking down on Sarai in the sense of you can't have a kid or whether it's simply what I think it is, that she just absolutely hates her. Either way, Hagar is completely, understandably, has a dislike for Sarai, a hatred for Sarai. And if it was to take a shot at the fact that she did something Sarai couldn't do, I completely agree, it's a sin and it's wrong, but I understand where it's coming from. This woman has thrown this situation on Hagar. And then she says, the Lord judge between me and thee. Meaning, I'll let God decide which of us is wrong. She is so caught up in her own desires and her own wants, and now in the fact that, well, she was successful in what she wanted him to do, and that didn't work out the way she wanted it to. And so she comes in and she literally proclaims herself as having nothing to do with this situation, that this is all Abram's fault. When in all reality, both of them were involved in the adultery. Both of them were involved in not having enough faith on God to wait. Both of them were willing to go through with this sin despite the obvious consequences that would come to be. And Abram takes a bad situation and makes it worse. But Abram said unto Sarai, behold, thy handmaid is in thy hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee. Many people look at this and they go, but see, Abram, he's trying to recoup this here. He's supporting his wife. No, he's not. He doesn't want to deal with the problem. He doesn't want to deal with his wife. He doesn't want to deal with the issue that he's committed. He now has a little young thing that he can go into whenever he wants to, and now he's going to have a child by her. He's fine. He does not care one single bit. This has done nothing to him other than make him have to sit and listen to his wife. He is essentially right now the husband sitting on the couch, eating a sandwich that his wife comes in and gripes, and he says, just do whatever you want to do. He doesn't want to hear Sarai's plea. He doesn't want to address the problem. He doesn't want to fix the problem. He just tells her, well, you just do whatever you want to do. Now, if these two women already hate each other, and he's giving one power over the other, what do you think is going to happen? She's going to be cruel. She's going to be mean. She's going to be as hard as she can. Says, and when Sarai dealt hardly with her, meaning that Sarai was not just mean, but there's even the aspect of physical with this girl, she fled from her face. Hagar has been thrown into this situation by two people that are supposed to be God's people. She was already their slave, and now she's being essentially used as a surrogate mother by them. She's got a child on the way, which I am sure she already has an instinctual love for, that she knows is going to be taken from her and given to the woman who just forced her to have this child and this relationship with her husband. And now she's being attacked by this woman for having an obvious feeling towards her of hatred, for not liking her, you know, because of all the evil and atrocities she has done to her. And so she flees from them all. She'd rather go out in the wilderness and die than to stay there with them. And this is truly a very sad story. It's not just a sad story and, well, Sarah and Abraham had absolutely no faith whatsoever, and they committed a horrible, horrible act. But it's also a tragedy in the sense that this young woman is put in a horrible position. She's in a trial that very few people have had to deal with or go through in their life. And she would rather be dead than to carry on living. And so she runs from their camp. Now, many of you may look at this and go, okay, so what's the point? Obviously, I understand. Don't be impatient. Don't lack faith. And then certainly, don't commit sin in an attempt to do God's will. But what is the application of what's going on with Hagar here? There's going to be times in your life, friend, where you are put through the ringer, where people are going to try to use and abuse you, where everything in the world that you could possibly think of is going to go wrong. And there's going to be times that you just want to go run, hide, end it all, whatever. You may have no desire to live. You may realize that or feel that death is going to be a better option than continuing through the trials and the challenges that you're going through. But I'm here to tell you, as Hagar is about to learn, there isn't a single situation that you're going through in your life that God is not aware of. Look at what happens here. It says, and the angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur. And so what happens is Hagar, of course, flees Sarai, runs out into the wilderness, and it says an angel of the Lord appeared to her. Now, you're going to hear her address this angel of the Lord later as God. This is, in fact, a pre-incarnate manifestation of Jesus Christ that has appeared. In fact, the first person that physically Jesus appears to in the Old Testament is this beaten woman, this woman that is going through a hard trial. And he asks her a very interesting question. Says, and he said, Hagar, Sarai's maid, whence camest thou, and whither wilt thou go? The angel of the Lord, Son of God, says, where have you come from, and where are you going? She has a horrible situation that she's going through in the camp with Abram and Sarai. But at the same time, to go out into the wilderness the way she has is going to result in her dying a very horrible death because she's not going to be able to take care of herself. In fact, she's staying near this well just in an attempt to keep herself alive. And God just asks her a very simple question. Where did you come from? What's the situation? What's going on? And where are you going? Meaning, sometimes in our life, guys, when we're faced with trials and problems and issues, even in a situation like what's going on with Hagar here, where she has been used in every sense of the word by Abram and Sarai, running from our problems typically ends up going from the frying pan into the fire. Running from the camp, running from dealing with these issues and problems, running and trying to use that as a way to solve what she was going through was only going to result in a much worse situation for her that was going to lead to the death of not only her, but the child that she was carrying. And she said, I flee from the face of my mistress Sarai. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, return to thy mistress and submit thyself under her hands. God looks at Hagar and says, go back and be a good servant. Now, many, many people, I have preached this passage in many churches and gone through it, and you talk about seeing angry people when this comes into place of, wait a minute, Brother Zach. Hagar, this young Egyptian woman who is brought back with them from their initial horrible big mistake of leaving Canaan and going to Egypt, where Abram also essentially sold off Sarai to Pharaoh to wife to try to save his own skin because he was worried they were going to kill him for her because she was pretty. Hagar, who's now seen all of this, knows all of this about them, has been brought back and is now forced into a very, very, very awful, adulterous, in many ways, creepy surrogate situation, who has just been being dealt with not just emotionally, but physically in a cruel manner by Sarai, who's run out. God's telling her to go back to that situation. Why in the world would God tell her to go back to that situation? Why would he say, go back where your problem is? Go back where the trial is. You have run away from your problems. I'm telling you to go back, and then not even furthermore, telling her to submit to Sarai, meaning to have humility, to be humble, to do whatever it is Sarai wants her to do. Why in the world would God tell her that? Why is it that you think God would tell us, no, you've got to go back and deal with this problem? There's going to be many times in your life, guys, where you're going to be faced with the same problem over and over and over again. And that's because you didn't deal with it the first time you were faced with it. My mother used to call it going around the mountain with God. Where you have the problem, you've got to go over the top of the mountain and you decide you're going to go around it instead. And God leads you all the way right back to where you started until you're willing to go back over said mountain the way he's told you to go about it. Okay? There's going to be many times that you're faced with that same problem because there is a lesson that you're going to learn. And that lesson is that God is with you in every trial you're in. Look at what he says to her. Says, and the angel of the Lord said unto her, I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for multitude. God says, go back, do what you're supposed to do, live the life you're supposed to live, be obedient to me, and I will what? I will see you through your problem. The child that you have is not just going to be yours, but the promise that any child of Abram was given, he is going to receive some of that as well. No, he's not going to be the covenant people. He's not going to be God's chosen people, Israel. But God is still going to watch over and preserve and make nations out of him the way that he promised Abram he would any of Abram's children. God says, I know the situation you're in. I want you to go back and face your problem and face it the way that I tell you to in obedience to me. Because if you will go back and face that problem, deal with it and see it through, I will see you through it all the way. And then he tells her something about her child. It says, and the angel of the Lord said unto her, behold, thou art with child and shall bear a son. Said, yes, you have a child, but even more so than that, Hagar, you have a son, which was a huge, huge blessing for a woman in this day and time. Says, and you shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard the name, hath heard thy affliction. And he will be a wild man. His hand will be against every man and every man's hand against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. God says, not only am I going to protect you, but I have also blessed you with a son. And you're going to name him God Sees. That's literally what the idea is here. Some translate and say God shall hear. But the idea of the word hear in this passage is that God knows. He sees what's going on. He hears the call of his people. He says, I have heard your affliction. I'm going to see you through your problem. And not only am I going to see you through your problem, but I'm going to bless you with a son. And this son is going to be, he's not going to live the greatest life. Everything's going to come to him hard. He's going to fight with everybody and everybody's going to fight with him. And as we all know, the Arab peoples come out of Ishmael's line. And many people look at this and they go, oh, well, this is the reason why we just don't need to worry about the Arabs. We need to let them do what they're going to do. Guys, at the end of the day, the Arabs are brothers with the Israelites. They are in need of prayer just like anyone else. They can be saved just like anyone else. And God purposefully preserved them, which means he's not done with those people yet. God would not have allowed this to occur if it wasn't still going to work into his plan in some form or fashion. He says, Hagar, I want you to go back and face your problem because I'm going to be with you through your problem. I've heard, I have seen what has been done to you. And I'm going to bless you with a son. And while he's going to have a rough life, and furthermore, he's going to fight amongst himself. He's going to be a wild man. Some places it's translated, he's going to be an ass of a man, meaning that he's going to constantly be fighting with other people. He's going to have a rough existence, and so are his descendants. But despite all of that, I will protect and preserve you, and I will protect and preserve your son and his descendants. And she called the name of the Lord that spake unto her, Thou God seest me. For she said, Have I also here looked after him that seeth me? Wherefore the well was called Beer Lahairoi. Behold, it is between Kadesh and Bered. And Hagar bare Abram a son, and Abram called his son's name, which Hagar bare, Ishmael. And Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bare Ishmael to Abram. Hagar learned something about God that you and I all fail to realize, is that when we're in problems and trials, first of all, you can't run from them. Running from them's only going to put you in a worse situation than you were before. You're going to eventually have to deal with that problem in some form or fashion. You may have a personality conflict with someone at work, and I promise you that if you quit your job and you go to another one, you're going to run into somebody there that you have the exact same conflict with. God will allow problems and trials to come to strengthen you, not only as a servant, but in your faith and your trust, because guess who's going to get you through that trial? God is. And by the time God is done getting you through it, you're going to be just like Hagar, where you understand God knows, hears, and sees all things. He knows what you're going through, and if you'll be obedient, he will get you through it. And she's obedient to the point that not only does she go back, but she tells them what happens, doesn't she? Because who named the child? It says, and Abram called his son's name, which Hagar bare, Ishmael. She is obedient to the point that she not only goes back, but she tells Sarai and Abram what God said. And when she would have told them that God said to name the child Ishmael, means the God that hears, the God that sees. What do you think was the lesson that Abram got from that name? I know what you did. Meaning God's not going to let him off the hook on this one, is he? God knows what he's done to Hagar. God knows what Sarai did to Hagar. And there's going to come a day that there's a reckoning for what they have done. And it's not going to just be for the two of them, but it's even for their descendants, because to this day, Israel and the Arabs fight like cats and dogs and go against each other over and over and over and over and over again in some of the most bloody and horrific conflicts the world has ever seen. See, friends, when we as God's children lose faith and become impatient, we will always make decisions that literally go against the word of God, trying to achieve God's work. Sarai and Abram have little faith, little patience. That's been 10 years since they've heard this promise, and they decide that they're going to make this happen by committing atrocious sins. The first one at the list, obviously adultery, forcing Hagar into a terrible relationship and situation with these two, using her as no more than a tool to achieve what they want. But on the flip side, when people do you wrong, when people do bad things to you, when you're facing a trial, you can be like Hagar and remember that there is a God who hears and a God who sees what you're going through. And so that is Genesis chapter 16. It's a very short chapter, but there's a lot of things that happen in it. For any of our new listeners that are on today, we're glad to have you guys with us. Enjoy having new people. Pray for all of our listeners. We love all of you. If there's any questions or comments, things that you have or things that you want to ask, you can always get in contact with me. There's a little comment bar on here. I've talked to a couple on there. There's some that have found us on Facebook, things like that. We love all of our new listeners. Glad that you're here. Hope that you go back and listen to all of them. We started with a survey of the whole Bible and then moved from there to looking at the Bible from an expository presentation, hoping to teach you guys not only how to study, but what questions to ask, the importance of why God said things the way he said them. There's nothing in the Bible that was laid out willy-nilly or just kind of thrown out there or stated in a manner that was flippant. Every single thing that is said and the way that it is said is important to what is going on in the situation and in the context of the chapter as a whole. So it's good to see all of you that are on here today. Good to have some of our listeners show up. Those that are listening later on the recorded, glad that you guys are listening to it. Hope all of you have an excellent week. We will get into Genesis chapter 17 this coming Friday, 10 o'clock my time, which is Eastern time, I believe, maybe Central time. We're in Arkansas. You can figure that one out for yourself. But